Okay, I will go straight into this and be shorter than last time and see if I can shave even a bit more off that. I'm just going to talk a bit about fire occurrence, and I'm going to talk just at the start briefly about just give you some stats on fire occurrence, something that you've already heard. Just give you a bit of a character on fire occurrence in mainly Ontario, but in Canada somewhat as well. Just as an opening here, there, when I'm talking about fire occurrence, there's two. I mean, as Robbo talked about earlier, there's two distinct causes: lightning and human activity, and they're distinctly different types of fires in terms of how they start. And so we always treat them very separately. So what I'm just gonna talk briefly about that and try to give you an idea of the differences in their characters. And then I'm going to talk about some of the work that I recently did in my thesis here on building daily predictive models of both lightning and human caused fire. As Rob explained earlier, the reason we want to predict fire occurrence on a daily level is so that the management agency can have some idea of what to expect, where to place their resources. And that's mainly what we're trying to do. And so we're trying to do this on a day or even half day hourly basis if possible. So across Canada, lightning causes 48% of the fires, just under half the fires, but it's responsible for 85% of the area burned. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, lightning can occur in very remote locations, so it can take a while for that fire to be detected. It can also take a while for suppression resources to get to them. The other reason is lightning fires can occur in clusters. You can easily get days where you get 150 lightning fires start in northeastern Ontario or something like that, and that tends to overwhelm the response agency. It's important to note, however, that these statistics vary significantly from region to region, and so generally, you know, throughout the provinces in central Canada that have lots of boreal forest, and you see about this 50-50 split. But in the Maritimes, for instance, you tend to see most of the fires are human caused. In fact, in Ontario, Rob already talked about these. I've summarized a slightly different 10-year average than Rob, so I have something different. And it's very similar to the Canada-wide stat that I just showed you, though. 47% of the fires were caused by lightning, and 82% of the area burned was from lightning. And just to give you some numbers, just over 600 on average, just over 1,600 lightning fires a year. And on average, from the MNR's fire detection network, there is just under 300,000 lightning strikes a year. I will just move on. Here's for the 10 years that this time span frames, 92 to 2001. This is the distribution in Ontario of lightning fires. And at this time, and Rob showed this earlier, this southern Ontario where we're at right now isn't in the fire management zone. And back then, they weren't really keeping track of everything up in the very high part of the province. So this is the lightning fires. This is human-caused fires. It's a slightly different time period. This is about 22 years. What you can really see in the human-caused fires is this really detailed structure. And anybody who knows Ontario, if I threw the highways and the railroads on this, well, you can sort of see where they are anyway. But essentially, the fires follow population centers and major highways, railways in particular. I'll talk really just briefly about lightning caused fire to start with. As I explained in my previous talk, lightning causes a fire. It strikes a tree. It runs the charge runs down the tree, starts an ignition smoldering somewhere near the base of the tree in the organic layer. Whether that fire ignites or whether the charge discharged by the lightning strike ignites depends on the moisture in that organic layer and some of the character of that organic layer, the bulk density, that sort of thing. Nice little zoom in on that. There's two distinct phases to a lightning ignition. There's the ignition from the lightning strike itself, and then there's what we call the arrival, and that's when the when the lightning fire that's been there smoldering in the organic layer near the base of the tree, it may meander away from the base of the tree, but when that's active enough to be throwing enough smoke that the fire can be detected. And this, what we find when we do our statistical analyses, this depends most strongly on the moisture content in the fine surface fuel. So it's indicators of surface fire spread essentially are good predictors of when you're going to get your arrival. And so there can be a delay between when that lightning strike ignites the initial fire smoldering in the organic and when that fire is then spreading enough, releasing enough smoke to be detected. And so that can range anywhere. I mean, generally it's around a couple days, that difference between the two, but it can be quite long. And again, that time depends on not only the amount of smoke that's being thrown up, but also the detection effort. And that's a tricky thing to try to model. In terms of people-caused fire, they can occur from several main causes. Rob showed a graph of these. I mean, the campers, the railways, residential. That's my dad lighting a fire in the backyard. But the occurrence has strong seasonality as well. And so we tend to group these. There's the campers and forest industry. There tends to be a bit of a, it's fairly flat, but there tends to be a spike in the mid to late summer. Whereas some of these other causes, railway fires, residential fires, they happen with people. Residential fires are people burning grass. Railway fires are caused by ignitions from the railway brakes themselves. As trains are going around corners, that sort of thing, and they start generally in the grass. When the grass is nice and brown and cured up is in the spring, and so we see this spike in the spring. So when you're modeling people-caused fire, you have to take into account really that there are these two different cause groups. And again, there's a strong dependence on moisture content in determining when and how many people-caused fires you're going to get. This is some plots from northeastern Ontario, so from about sort of Great Lakes Forest and the bottom of the boreal forest, North Bay, say up to just a bit beyond Timmins. Sorry, I don't have a map here, but this is just showing essentially something like the probability of getting a fire. This axis takes too long to explain, but it's essentially your probability of getting a fire happening under these different FFMC classes. And I showed these earlier in the previous talk, but I just thought I would show them again. People-caused fire is also, as we saw in that original graph, strongly influenced by where people are, what people are doing. And I'm not going to get into this in these talks, but this is some work that Dave and myself have been doing. But here is just a plot of the correlation between what we've done is broke the province down, the intensively protected zone in the province where we know we're getting, we're detecting all the fires that are happening, or a good, certainly 99% of them. We broke it down into the eco districts, which are nice sort of small areas that have very characteristic, very similar fuel, topography, underlying soil structures. Now, we broke down the province into that and had a look at the number of fires here it's as a function of the length of railway through each eco district. So it makes a lot of sense, but when you see a strong trend up here, as you get more railway in your eco district, you get more fire. Here is the same with this is looking at roads, both major and minor roads across each of these points is the summary, the total road length in the eco district. This is just showing you as you're getting more road length, you get more fire occurrence activity. Again, this is just average numbers of fires on the y-axis, average number of fires per year across this. It's normalized by area as well, I believe. But if you add population, in an interaction with the road length, you explain even more of that variance. It's interesting though, population by itself doesn't do a great job at explaining the numbers of fires that you would expect annually in any of these ecodistricts. But if you count up the number of communities, that does a really excellent job of explaining the variability across each of the ecodistricts in the province in terms of annual average numbers of fires. And I think the reason population doesn't work is you tend to be overwhelmed by populations of 50,000, 60,000, where people aren't really living on the border of the city, and so in that they're not that class or type of people that would be, or you don't own land, so you're not burning off your grass, you're not doing the thing that people, the things that people who own farms and land do. So I'm going to talk. That's just my sort of long or short background of fire occurrence in Ontario. Just trying to give you a character of it all. I'm just going to talk about some of the fire occurrence prediction modeling that that I did most recently. Start with people caused fire. I'm just going to go through this very quickly. Again, ignition of a person caused fire is dependent on fuel moisture, and it's dependent on human activity. And in this study, all we're doing is looking at the dependence of the ignition, the probability of ignition, on both fuel moisture and the seasonality. Previous research, and this Dave Martell did a lot of research on this in the 70s and in the 80s. What he showed was that, and other people have carried on this research in other areas. Dave focused on Ontario. What he's shown is that people caused fire occurrence can be modeled following a Poisson distribution over a fire district, essentially, and that you need a large enough area so that you're you are getting a reasonable amount of fire activity. A fire district is maybe the province of Ontario. You'd break it down into 10 or 12 different fire districts. I'm not sure the real number right now, but. What Dave also showed was that the expected number of fires is a function of the mean of that Poisson distribution is a function of fuel moisture itself. So, what we did in this in developing new people caused fire occurrence model is used Poisson regression. They originally used logistic regression. We used Poisson regression to build models for each of the ecoregions in Ontario of the expected daily fire occurrence. Here we built these models based on data about 20 years of data from 1980 to 2000. It's important in building these models that you don't go too far back in time because people's habits people's use of the landscape changes with time. So you don't want to go too far back in time. We looked at predictors, and some of these are similar to what Dave looked at. There's a couple differences. We looked at the fine fuel moisture code, which, as I've shown, is a strong predictor of when you're going to start to get ignition. Also, you looked at an index of probability of sustained flaming. This comes from the test fire. This comes from early analysis of the test fire work that the test fires that we've been playing with, and a couple of the other moisture indexes, and some seasonal terms. Again, in terms of results, the ecoregion-based models, what we found, there was always a strongly significant predictor of the sustainability of flaming in the litter layer. So this is the FFMC, or the probability of sustained flaming. And always in the models as well, but of weaker significance, was these this duff moisture term. This is just a really coarse summary, summarizing the daily stuff into annual summaries, looking at this is each dot represents a each dot represents the annual summary of predicted versus observed numbers of fires for each of the ecoregions, and I don't have the ecoregions. There's about 10 or 12 different ecoregions in the province. I don't have them broken down here. I apologize for that. I just wanted to show just a bit of how well the model was working when you summarize it up. I don't have lots of detail to show on this one, but just some of the and that's about all I have time to do to talk about the people caused stuff. In the future, what we want to do is link those. The models that I were talking about were very moisture-based, moisture and seasonality. We want to link those to, and we built one in each of the ecoregions. We want to link those with this other work that I was talking about that Dave and myself have been working on with some other people in terms of the human factors, the railway length, the road length, the numbers of communities, to try to build a much more robust model of people caused fire. That's where we're going with that. In terms of lightning fire models, I've already talked a bit about this. We model them as two separate processes: ignition from the strike itself, and the arrival. And I'm not going to get into those any anymore. just keep in mind that they're two distinct processes, and you can break the process of a lightning fire occurrence down even further if you really want to get into it. But I think for the purposes of this discussion, it makes sense to break it down into those two main processes. What we did was looked at daily data from 1992 to 2001, and this is daily lightning data, weather data, fire data, forest type. I mean, with the weather data, we've of course calculated our fuel moisture estimates using the CFF DRS. Forest type is from a map that the OM&R have of sort of detailed forest FBP fuel types. What we did was summarize all of this into 20 kilometer by 20 kilometer grids. If you were up here like me, you could see that where each of the grid points were. Those are the tiny little dots. The big green dots are just where the lightning detection direction finders are in Ontario. So there's an array of like 2,000 20 by 20 cells across Ontario that we used for this. We built daily lightning fire ignition models, and this we used logistic regression modeling as the dependent, the number of fires in that particular 20 kilometer by 20 kilometer cell divided by the number of lightning strikes each day. And we used, as predictors, we used all our moisture value, our moisture codes. We used a few of these other percentage of positive strikes, timing of storm. We looked at days when there were dry lightning, this sort of thing. We built models in each of these ecoregions, because what we found was the strength, the sheltered duff moisture code that I talked about earlier was the really strong predictor of lightning fire ignition based on everything we tried here. And I'll go over again what the variables were. But what we found was when we included that in the models and included ecoregion and an interaction between the two, there was a very strong signal there. And so the strength of the effect of sheltered DMC varied from ecoregion to ecoregion. And this is because, for the most part, I believe, because the forest type changes from ecoregion to ecoregion. So we built a model for each of these 11 ecoregions. Again, the sheltered DMC was always the strong predictor. The percentage of positive strikes, lightning can be either positive or negative, was a strong predictor. The theory is that positive strikes carry more current. Timing of the storm was important. The weather following the fire was important. If it actually was very wet, it would put out the ignition. We also included fuel type in here in terms of the percentage of closed canopy fuels in there. That was a significant but weak predictor as well. Again, I haven't added any of the equations there, but we can talk in more detail anytime this week if anybody wants to talk about it. Probability of arrival, this is this other process. This is the probability that ignited fire sometime in the past will being detected sometime after the ignition. So again, we build logistic regression models of every day from the ignition point to the arrival point. We evaluated whether that fire arrived or not, essentially. And what we looked at to try to predict that was the weather, the fuel moisture, and potential fire behavior indices, so essentially the CFFDRS outputs. Again, we built ecoregion-based models for the same reason, the fuel moisture codes, the strength of their signal varied from ecoregion to ecoregion. The result of this, there was always a strong predictor of the receptivity of the fine fuels on the surface to fire spread, but there was also the factor, and this is much like the people caused models, I guess, because this process most closely resembles the arrival of a person caused fire. There's an ignition out there. It just starts. When does it really start spreading? The DMC and DC, the moisture in the lower organic, made a bit of a difference as well. I'm just going to go into a bit of an application of this project. Here's a map of this is something that a fire management response agency would be interested in seeing. This is what they would look at. This is my vision of it anyways. This is a map of the sheltered DMC. Again, we're going color. In terms of color, we go blue is very low, red is extreme. So what we see in northeastern Ontario is it's getting pretty dry. Here's a map of the probability of ignition, just those logistic regression models that we built. So that integrates sheltered DMC, but it also integrates a bunch of other factors like the percentage of closed canopy fuels, the DMCs, that sort of thing. If we throw the lightning on there, you can see that there's several storms. This is just from a particular day, July 21st, 2001. throw the lightning on there, you can see there's a bit of activity all across the province. This is the combination of the probability of ignition multiplied by the number of strikes in each of the cells, so just a very sort of coarse expected numbers of fires. I've been trying to emphasize, as I've tried to get this the Ministry of Natural Resources sort of trained up on how to interpret this and help getting this used, I've been trying to emphasize the qualitative aspects of these maps. And I think this goes back to perhaps the question about why don't we just give them a probability of ignition or something like that. And I think it's just a concept that people have a hard time. Just after talking with people in the field for a number of years, it's a concept that people have a hard time with, and they want to make their own judgments. I think that's why we like, say, the DMC code, because it doesn't really stand for anything. It's not like, okay, I see the DMC is 35 right now, but what does that really mean? Well, if you're in this stand, it means your moisture is this. If you're in this stand, it means your moisture is this. But the fire manager gains this intuition, and so they know, and they don't get sidetracked, because that has a physical sort of dimensionality to it. And I think probability is a hard concept for people to get. That's just my perception of it. So this is just sort of telling you, okay, you can see that the expected numbers of fires is following where the lightning occurred, except that lightning up top, up way in the north, it's like, oh, we're not going to worry about that. Might get a little bit here, but we can expect a lot of fire activity right there. And we throw the real fire activity on there. I don't know if you can see that from the back, but it's just for this particular day, it just follows. This was a day at the start of a big lightning fire flap, so I've looked at some of the interesting days throughout this. This is the day 2 days later. You can see the same character in the sheltered DMC, because that's slowly changing sort of index. Again, probability of ignition there. It's a big lightning storm going across. I can't remember. I think there's like 15,000 strikes in this particular storm going across the north. But it's really, you can see that it's you can't really see it well from the sheltered DMC map, but you can. Take the lightning off. You can see that in the sheltered DMC map, you're starting to strike into some of that orange high area. But if you look at the probability of ignition, really, you're not getting much activity up in or down into that area where you really have a high probability of ignition. And what you end up is a fairly flat, like low to moderate numbers of ignition, even though you've got 20,000 strikes up there. I think three or four times the number of strikes that were on that previous day, but you still get very few fires, and they sort of sitting there right on that little edge. Anyways, this is just I have a whole bunch of these that I've been using in technology transfer sessions to the MNR folks and some folks in the Western province as well. Here's the same summary just annually. This is again, I summarize the annual number of fires observed, annual number that would be predicted by the model for each of the ecoregions. So I end up with about 80 or so points. Just trying to show that it follows that this line of equivalence not too badly. The reason I wanted to show this is that in each of these ecoregions, the number of lightning strikes, it varies by maybe a factor of two or three each year, if you start to sum them up. The number of fires that occur in an ecoregion will vary anywhere from 50 to, it might vary by a factor of 50 to 100. And so there's quite a bit of variability, not in terms of lightning, but what's happening is that the moisture content in terms of when those storms are happening is playing a strong role there anyways, and what type of forest they're really striking into. Anyways, future, as I said, we're currently implementing this daily fire occurrence stuff in the Ontario Response Centre with Rob, and we're developing similar models, going to try to see if this sort of approach, this logistic regression approach and the sheltered DMC works in Alberta and Saskatchewan. And so that is it.